Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for our Monday medical briefing. With us this week, Dr. Santina Wheat, family medicine physician at Northwestern's Delnor Hospital in Geneva. Doctor, good to have you with us this morning. Let's talk first about the new review of medical cannabis. What was the takeaway from this?
Good morning. So this review of cannabis was not super surprising. It showed us that there isn't necessarily as much benefit as some of us were really hoping. We still have so much to learn about the real impact of cannabis. And so we'll just have to see and spend more time studying what it is actually good for.
This is a pretty in-depth study. What was it, like 15 years of cases of research?
Yes.
And we'll stay tuned for more on that for sure. Another interesting study, the GLP-1 medications like Ozempic and Zepbound showing little effect on cancer. This was a little disappointing, wasn't it?
You know, it was a disappointing study, but I will have to say that I am still hopeful. When I was reviewing through this, it was about 70 weeks. And when I think of the impact of obesity on cancer, I think about it over years and years and years. And so I still think we're going to have to watch the people that have had significant weight loss from this class of medications and see how they do over time. Because things like liver cancer, it takes a very long time for your liver to be in bad shape before that happens. So I'm still hopeful that we'll see significant impact, though there's no quick fix, as there isn't with anything. There's no quick fix to preventing cancer.
With so many people on these weight loss drugs now, I guess so far, and I guess we have to wait, but no long-term ill effects? Is that what the case is at this time?
For most people, that is absolutely true. There are some people that have had side effects from these medications and can't really tolerate them. So putting the group aside that can't really tolerate them, we've actually had this class of drugs around for a long time, for about 20 years, not with all of the weight loss that we've seen more recently moving that quickly. But so far, I will say so far, so good. Honestly, I more often see a study that says, oh, it's this much better than it was.
Yeah, it's been used to treat, is it type 2 diabetes?
Exactly, yes. Type 2 diabetes, sleep apnea we've seen benefits from, preventing cardiovascular risk we've seen benefits from. So it's really been an exciting time in managing all of these chronic diseases.
A new Food and Drug Administration recommendation has come out regarding the use of testosterone therapy for men. What was the bottom line on this study?
So the bottom line on this was we are going from a different way of how we can prescribe it. It's a different schedule at this point. Right now, testosterone is considered a controlled substance, and so there's extra precautions in place in order to get it. And it's changing that. So it'll be easier to prescribe it, easier to get refills. What I'm unsure about what this will do is if it will be easier for insurances to pay for it or not, because that is actually more often the challenges for my patients, is that we have to go through significant hoops to get their insurance companies to pay for it. So yeah, we'll see if that changes.
Yeah, you hear a lot about testosterone therapy for women, but it's crucial for men, isn't it?
It absolutely is. I have had some patients that we have even gone through all those significant hoops, and the amount of difference for them has really been impactful, especially men that are, I will say, later in their 30s, but more often in their 40s and 50s, when the testosterone drops too fast for some of them, it's really been impactful for their quality of life.
Yeah, I was reading how it affects just about everything, muscle and bone health, mood, energy, cognitive function. It's quite important, isn't it?
It is. The change is amazing when I see someone who is able to benefit from it.
More health news you can use now. Dr. Santina Wheat is a family medicine physician at Northwestern Medicine's Delnor Hospital in Geneva. Doctors may have another tool to treat migraines now. Tell us about this, doctor.
Yeah, this was a great option. This is instead of giving somebody IV medicine for their migraine that is an opiate, this is specifically doing a nerve block to try to help the migraine improve. I will say the downside about this is seeing my colleagues in the emergency room right now, they are quite overwhelmed. It has been a really busy time. And so it does have some downsides in that you have to have a special team that can do this and has the training to do this. Hmm. It is not quite as simple as the nurse giving you the medicine and your IV like we get most of our other things.
Hmm.
But it's a great option. It looks like it has great relief. It just might take a little bit longer to get done in the emergency room.
Yeah, this apparently was the first major update to the American Headache Society's guidelines. I never knew there was an organization like that, but it's the first major update to their guidelines for migraine treatment in almost 10 years, right?
Yes, we've had the same tools, and so this is a great update. It'll just be figuring out how we can roll it out in our different spaces.
Let's talk a little about artificial intelligence and how you are using it, and some questions you might want to ask your doctor regarding your appointment. What do we need to know here?
So I have to tell you, as a family physician, so primarily seeing patients in the outpatient, this artificial intelligence that this study was talking about is a game changer for me. So I'm using it in my office to listen to the conversation that my patient and I are taking, and then I walk out of that room, and 2 minutes later, my entire note is written for me.
Hmm.
And so that means it's catching things that I forgot to write down. It means I'm able to look at my patient and their face, and we're really able to have a conversation with less of me being focused on the computer so that I don't forget anything. And when I go to send their prescriptions or put in their referrals, I will say it sometimes has caught the things that I have forgotten. That being said, it's really important to know if your offices are using it, that any of the physicians or APPs that you're going to, you want to make sure you know whether they're using it or not. We generally have people sign a consent, but it might be included in that big general consent that you walk in and sign when you start working with a physician's office. So it's good to ask those questions. In this case, it's audio only. It's not video recording us. And so that's sometimes a question. And it can make mistakes. So the physician should still be reviewing it for clarity.
Well, it seems to me this is all good news for a patient, isn't it?
I think it's in general good news for a patient because it means that your chart is more likely to be fully thorough. And then other ways AI are helping us is sometimes it's going through and saying, oh, this person has this test and they had this lab. Maybe you should be considering this, or they're overdue for this thing. So it really can help your care team identify the things that you might need to live your healthiest life.
Yeah, sounds good. This epilepsy treatment using AI is very positive too, isn't it?
Absolutely. That was sort of what I was alluding to, where if you can see if you've missed a certain MRI or if you've been on these medications and haven't had a screening test to make sure that the medications aren't impacting you. And it really can sometimes identify a diagnosis that maybe you missed. My main job is teaching residents, and I've had a couple of them be surprised that things have popped up for them that they wouldn't have put together otherwise. And so it's really been great.
Yeah, sounds like it. And finally, I guess we're about to spoil a great winter holiday treat, hot chocolate. Okay, tell us why we shouldn't have too much of this, Doctor.
So I just will start by saying it's always moderation is the key. So I'm not saying you can't have hot chocolate, but when you think about what hot chocolate is it is almost purely sugar. And so some people will tell themselves, oh, I'm getting a fair amount of calcium by having hot chocolate, especially if it is made with milk. Though, honestly, some of us are making it with powder and water, so that's not super helpful for the calcium. But all of the sugar can be bad for your bones. All of the sugar can be a diuretic. And, of course, it can contribute to increasing your weight. And if you have diabetes, of course, making your blood sugars much higher and causing challenges with that.
Moderation
is key.
Yeah, I mean, if you make it with milk, it's richer, and actually it would be healthier than making it with water, wouldn't it?
It would be healthier. It You still want to do moderation, though, because all of the sugar really does outweigh the benefit of the calcium in the drink.
Yeah, I'm still going with my, but I need my calcium argument when my wife says stop with the hot chocolate. Appreciate all of the information, Dr. Santina Wheat, Northwestern Medicine. Hope you have a nice Christmas.
Thank you. You too. And stay warm.
We'll try. Thanks for being with us.